I have four speaker cards for this. Mary Ellen Dick, John Ricker, Mike Miller, Pam Hitchcock. If anyone else wishes to address the board on this, please fill out a card and give it to staff. Okay, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Mary Ellen Dick, and I'm here representing the Central Coast Ag Water Quality Coalition and the Farm Bureaus of Santa Clara and San Benito Counties. And I want to thank you for having this hearing, and we've been doing some work with the staff on this. We do have concerns, though, about this TMDL and whether it makes sense to do it this way at this time. In particular, we are very happy that you're focusing on the human health aspects of this and the human fecal coliform. As the mother of a surfer, I'm very glad that we're starting to look at what's happening out in the ocean as he comes back with all sorts of weird rashes. But we are concerned that this shouldn't be looking at fecal coliform, which studies don't show have that good a correlation unless we are doing the work to only find the human fecal correlation. There isn't the correlation with animal fecal that is causing the human health impacts on that are being cited for recreational contact. So that doesn't seem as reasonable. We're also concerned that the background levels that are being used as the basis are not representative. The background levels in this study are from water samples taken in a high rain, 48-inch rain area up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, whereas the Pajaro watershed, and as you saw from that big map, is primarily coming out of the Diablo Hills, and they have an average of 13 inches of rain. So the concentrations are much not likely to be representative. And we are very concerned about how much animal life, you know, it's the whole questions that many of you brought up about how do you distinguish the cows and the pigs, especially the pigs, and the rest of the animals without doing that level of very expensive testing all the time. And if the focus is to try and get the human impacts, because this is on human recreational contact, which is human fecal, then that needs to be There needs to be a better way to really focus there. There's been a lot of discussion about ranchers, but in my role with the Central Coast Coalition, I've been doing a lot of ranch water quality classes. But if we don't have a good criteria for what shows that there's enough being done, then their answer is always going to go back to ranchers. Whereas there are many more concentrated sources of domestic animal waste coming from the little ranchettes, those people that have the goats up in their backyards, the horses, and there's no mechanism to really regulate them. We have the MS4 permits, we have the ag waivers, but there doesn't seem to be anybody that's watching the ranchettes, and also particularly in San Benito County, all of the One more minute.
Go ahead.
1 second. The 5-acre properties that have septic sitting in very high groundwater areas. And those, San Benito, I know it was probably an oversight, but San Benito County was not listed as one of the counties with a responsibility permit here. So thank you for your time.
Your comment about the baseline data that's being used, you don't feel is accurate. Is that the slide that had the standards on it and the...
I think she's, correct me if I'm mistaken, ma'am, but I think you're referring to the references to Waddell Creek. Is this, can you hear me? Is this on?
Yes.
The references to Waddell Creek in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which was referenced as an analog. It's an undeveloped watershed that is not showing fecal coliform impairment, and that was used as sort of a baseline criteria. And correct. So I think that's what you're referring to.
That's
now.
What I'm referring to. That's up in a very high rain area, which is going to have a different dilution. So that, whereas we believe that if you looked at San Benito Creek at the level of fecal that's in there because of the animals. We only get 13 inches of rain back in there, and we think the concentration that would be considered background level concentration would be much higher.
And by animal, you mean wild?
I mean wild animal.
Can I add something, please? This is Lisa McCann, Environmental Program Manager. The data and the discussion about those concentrations was not expressed to say we believe this is the background concentration that we would find in Pajaro River if we did an accurate background, try to determine what the accurate background levels for the Pajaro River watershed and the upper San Benito, as Ms. Stick points out. But that the purpose of that was to say that we believe from that information and related information that the possibility of meeting water quality objectives when you control these controllable sources that we see and are not existing in the way they're currently being managed, that we can meet the water quality objective with natural sources present.
Right. And I mean, I do work with the ag community, with the farmers and the ranchers, helping them work on water quality plans. And we have been working diligently trying to improve water quality here in the Pajaro watershed. So we want clear directives, and we want to help solve the problem. But we are concerned that what we've got with this TMDL is requirements that are going to be too hard to prove. You know, either that we are doing, the farmers are doing what they need to do, or that the problem is the farmers versus, as I said, these other sources that nobody is looking at.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
May I say something to Ms. Dick? The ranchettes, excuse me, they do, of course, they would fall under the regulation of us seeking compliance with the prohibition. Not only you, but other people have told us that they feel that the ranchettes are a problem, you know, the hobby farms, whatever you want to call them, and they are certainly within our viewshed of when we get to implementing this TMDL. So I don't want you to think that we're ignoring them, because
right.
We're not.
And I know, but I live here, and I know how many houses, 5-acre houses that have 14 goats up in the corner
right.
sitting here on our creek.
Right. We know it. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
May I ask a follow-up question
sure.
as well? Ms. Dick, you said you have been teaching ranch management
yes.
courses, and that includes grazing.
Grazing, yes.
Operations. Both Pete and Chris responded to a couple of board questions here in terms of what can be done reasonably as far as grazing operations.
Right.
Do you have anything to add to that for the board's benefit?
I mean, we've been working with the farmers, and we've got, you know, we do these 15-hour classes to work on how to improve, protect water quality. And what all of the experts say, again, we go back to the water in the creek, okay? It's you don't want the animals in the creek while we're in the rainy season. You don't want the animals right next to the creek right before the rainy season, well, you're still likely to have wet manure sitting there that can get picked up. But the studies say that if it's dry, that's not a problem. So grazing in the early summer is not a problem. We are working with them to make sure there's good buffer strips. You know, it doesn't take a lot of grass area to protect as the water runs up and down. We talk about moving the animals, you know, so that you don't overgraze. I mean, there's a whole list of best management practices that we've been working with the ranchers to put into place. Farmers too, you know, dairy farmers, the different farmers, and what we had hoped and what we had asked when we were doing this was that we would say yes, indeed, that this kind of best management practices shows that you're doing the right thing. If the rancher has a ranch management plan, and then there's a defense, right? If you're coming upstream, you say, all right, this is what we're doing. This is what we have achieved. We've put these best management practices into place. And so it makes me very uncomfortable when you ask questions about, you know, what can a rancher do to show that he's doing the right thing, and they're going, you know, that leaves the level of uncertainty. You know, ranchers are going to put a lot of effort into, you know, doing that movement, doing off-stream watering sites, doing You know, salt licks, as I said, we talked about put the salt licks far away so it's an attractant away, then we would like a recognition that we are working with you to do our share. And really, we're very uncomfortable with the focus on the ranchers who have big areas and not so many cows on them versus, I go back to all of those small, close to streams, close in right at the fringes of cities, with the condensed animals sitting along Yagas Creek, sitting here along the Pajaro River that really aren't being addressed.
And but Mrs. Dick, I don't see any specificity as to any one group. These are broad categories. It's domestic animals, it's human waste, so that it includes just about everything.
Yeah, I
think the ranches are not being singled out, they're just part of the group.
Yeah, well, our concern
as is the person with the 20 goats, you know, on the hillside, where you know, rainwater is going to cause that flow to get into a stream. They're part of this,
right? I just would like to my experience over the years is that the targets that you're already regulating are easier to go after. So that was why I wanted to talk about this.
And those targets are the?
Well, the ag communities and the cities. You know, you've got the MS4 permits.
Right.
And most of the cities are in their very beginning rounds of MS4 permits.
The problem is the cities and the counties point outside, mm-hmm. and say you're not going after those other sources.
Right. And we want to work with you. I mean, that's why we're doing these classes. What we'd like is some clear criteria that say, okay, here, you know, with the irrigated ag, we said, all right, if a farmer is taking their 15-hour classes, if they're have a farm plan in place, if they're doing their best management practices, if they're doing these things, they will be deemed to be in compliance. If we find that's not enough, you come back, they get a fix-it ticket, and they have to redo their plan to make a better program. I mean, that gives some kind of certainty, it gives some kind of timeline, and it's something that you can work on.
That's what I think staff is looking for, not that they're going to do water quality monitoring and testing or try to do detailed allocation calculations, but to start doing what you're suggesting to show that they're not contributing to an exceedance.
Okay.
It sounds like you're on the same page. Am I incorrect in that?
No, you are correct. Okay. You're not incorrect. I couldn't have said it any better.
All right. Did you have a question, Mr. Hayashi?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment, you know, that this is all new territory, basically. And the good part is that you can't go to Walmart or Kmart and buy the solution at some price that you can't deal with. You know, you're at the point where you could actually look at different ways to come into compliance, or I don't know if come into compliance is the right way to put it, but you're at the point of entry, so you could basically write your ticket and put in what you think are the best management practices. And then all you have to do is support them and substantiate it.
Well, we've been working on this for about 6 years, so we would be happy to provide the information and sit down with your staff to work on a plan to do that.
Good.
We would
okay.
really like that.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much. Mr. Ricker.
Morning. John Ricker, Water Resources Division Director with County of Santa Cruz. I actually haven't spent a lot of time on the Pajaro TMDL, but it includes a couple of things that then get carried over and applied to other TMDLs and other programs, and actually relates to, you know, the next two items on your agenda, both the Corralitos TMDL and then also the on-site management program. So I wanted to address my concerns with two things. One is the human fecal material discharge prohibition, and the other is the zero waste load allocation from human sources, both of which on the face are good ideas, but I'm concerned that we may be creating yet another regulation or tool that overlaps with some of the ones that we already have that may not be necessary, may be overly complex, and may not really be implementable. And I've had some of these discussions with staff, and I still am confused and have questions about this. The zero waste load allocation raises an interesting question, that if you have a stream that has a fecal coliform level of 100, but you still have indications of fecal, human fecal contribution, say it's 10% of that 100, is that stream at attainment or not? I mean, it does meet our standards in the receiving water bodies, which essentially were developed for human health protection. That's what the 200 was based on. But where are we in that position? Do we have to get the contribution down to zero, and is that practical? We did do extensive ribotyping in San Lorenzo watershed and our coastal watersheds with some of the grants. We do feel that that's a pretty good, gives you a pretty good semi-quantitative indication of the relative contribution from the different sources to your load. And we did use that extensively in our study and did calculations of what we might expect the bacteria levels to be with various control measures. So that is a good tool. Now we're using some of the more exotic qPCR techniques, which can pick up DNA from either human bacteria or human viruses. They may or may not be living DNA. There may have been human material in the water body in the past. It may have been deactivated by treatment, but it does still show up on the test. So will those test results indicate that even though we may have had some human fecal material discharge upstream in the past, whether or not that's a public health impact, we don't know yet. So there's some concerns there. The other thing with the human fecal discharge prohibition, I've asked staff why that isn't just applied basin-wide. Why do we just enroll individual watersheds as these TMDLs come up? It does seem like it should. If it's good enough for one watershed, it really should be appropriate for the whole basin. I got a few more seconds, hopefully.
Go ahead.
They say, well, we've got those prohibitions already in place, but it's unclear where those might be and whether we really need this one. The other thing is the human fecal material discharge prohibition seems to be used. It seems very appropriate for dealing with issues with homeless encampments where there are no other regulatory tools, but it does not seem appropriate for septic systems or sewer systems or even private laterals which are connected to the sewer systems, that those really should be regulated with the existing tools that we have, either through the WDRs and the collection system requirements for the permitted sewer facilities. Bring the laterals into that program rather than having yet a separate approach on private laterals or a separate approach on septic systems. So I'd urge you to consider that and maybe answer some of those questions.
Well, let's get clarification from staff. My guess is that prohibition really wouldn't kick in unless the 200 or 400 level standards are violated. In other words, if you have an impaired water body, then that prohibition would kick in. But let's say if you take his example, you're at 100, you're not violating the water body contact standards. What if that 100 is human fecal bacteria? What's the issue?
Okay, well, with Mr. Ricker's example, actually the prohibition would be violated. If you had a concentration that was achieving the water quality objective and you could demonstrate, if you could demonstrate that some of the fecal coliform or E. coli, whatever the FIB that you're using is from a human source, then someone somewhere along the line is violating the prohibition. And let me give you a little background on this. Mr. Ricker was here last year at this very place, I believe, or maybe it was in Salinas, and we had three TMDLs approved by this board. And those TMDLs had sources that included human sources, and we gave them a waste load allocation equal to the water quality objective. The board approved it. We sent it to State Board, and the State Board Office of Chief Counsel looked at that and said, no, actually, human sources has to be an allocation of zero. You cannot allow untreated human fecal material in surface waters. So make those all zero. And we're going to be hearing those TMDLs in May. So consequently, with that knowledge, we had to give these allocations zero.
So even if, in his example, you're at 100, but you have information that that 100 is all coming from human bacteria, that will violate the prohibition.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ricker.
Well, that would suggest to me that maybe I won't do ribotyping or qPCR to, unless I'm over 200 and I want to know where the violation is coming from. I think it's going to put us in a potentially difficult situation. We're clearly interested in eliminating all human sources of contamination to the maximum extent practical. But again, it's,
you know, I would think you would want to know that. If you've got human...
I was kidding when I said that.
Okay.
No, we do want to know that, and we do want to eliminate those sources. But at some point,
yeah,
you know, good enough is good enough. And when is good enough? You know, we're going to keep at it as much as we can, but I'm concerned that we're getting something that may be unimplementable in the long run.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Mike Miller. Then Pam Hitchcock. And Mr. Perlman, I have your card. However, you wanted to speak about Los Osos within this agenda item? Okay, because that address Los Osos. Okay, got it. Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Mike Miller. I'm Santa Clara County Cattlemen's Association, and I just kind of wanted to weigh in on our concerns. We're always concerned about getting caught up in monitoring for things that we don't think we're guilty of. The costs of this can be very prohibitive on large rangelands. So it sounds like everything's going in the right direction. I'm a little concerned that what I read written in the reports isn't quite the same as what we're hearing today, and I'm hoping that means that things are changing. And we're hoping that you keep updating the science that you're using in these projects. I just went to a seminar yesterday where we listened to the two top doctors from University of California and the latest studies that they've been doing, and they're finding that fecal pats, we call cow pies, if you measure what comes out of them, 90% of all of the pathogens are filtered out in the first 1 foot going downhill through the grass. And if you go to the next yard, 99.9% of that 10% is filtered out. So, you know, a yard and a foot, and there's nothing left. It's all filtered out by the soil. So these latest studies are showing that things are looking pretty good. So I just hope that you keep updated on all this latest stuff.
Thank you for your comments. Pam Hitchcock. And last speaker is Alon Perlman.
Hi, my name is Pam Hitchcock. I live in Southern Monterey County, and when I heard this, I just had one question, is how do you expect ranchers to prove that they're in compliance with all of these regulations? My husband and my father-in-law run a cow-calf operation down there, but I asked the question to someone sitting next to me. They said, fill out a card. So I'm curious how you would have ranchers and cattle people and people with domestic animals prove that they are in compliance with these regulations that you have.
Okay, thank you. Well, staff, would you like to go over that one more time?
Yes, I'm basically going to reiterate in a shorter.
A card here, but Ms. Hitchcock, do you want to come back up here, though? Mr. Allen, if you could.
It says item 17. 18.
Why don't you remain up here, and let's make sure that, staff explains this.
Okay.
So that you...
I could listen back there, but okay.
Yeah, might as well take advantage of this moment right now.
Okay.
Make sure it's clear.
Thank you for your question, Ms. Hitchcock. Like I said earlier, what we're going to do, you know, when we have basically the human resources to be able to begin to implement this, we're going to be taking a look at water quality exceedances in the watershed, and we're going to have to identify problem areas, and whether that be ranchettes or, you know, hobby farms, as we were talking about earlier, or cow-calf operations such as yours. And to make a long story short, we're going to handle it at this point in time. That's all we know, is that we're going to have to handle it on an individual case basis. You know, like the gentleman said just before you, there is research to suggest that if you just get cattle away from the stream when that stream is running, and there's grass, even grass, it doesn't have to, you even have to take woody vegetation, just grass will filter that out. That'll take care of most of it. And that's what we're going to be looking for. We're going to be looking for basically demonstration that something is being done to alleviate anything that would be causing exceedance of the water quality objective. And we're going to have to handle that on a case-by-case scenario. And the implementation section of the resolution basically states that we will be asking for some sort of a report, and that report is going to be asking you to demonstrate what you are doing in order to meet the water quality objectives.
Cattle are in the north part of the ranch this month. Oh, you know, when in the rainy season, basically, is that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Sorry. That basically, so we have the cattle on the north part of the ranch in the rainy season away from the watershed. I mean, is that basically what you're asking? Or, I mean, because we rotate the cattle in different fields in different times of the year, so.
Well, you know, I guess then we would have to just basically handle it on a case-by-case basis, you know, depending on when the stream is running. We realize that particular watershed isn't a perennial stream. You know, we acknowledge that, and there are going to be things like that, field conditions, how, you know, the type of vegetation, the slope, how many cattle, the time of the year, is the water running, and all that is going to have to be taken into consideration at the time.
Ms. Hitchcock, do you know Mrs. Dick?
No, I don't.
Because
I'm going to introduce myself after.
Well, I think
meeting.
You should, because it sounds like she has a lot of valuable information that may be helpful.
Right.
Okay.
I'd just like to add one bit of clarification. What the implementation plan of the TMDL does that is different for folks like Ms. Dick and the folks that have been taking her courses,
right,
is it gives us the authority, and we intend to use it, and it establishes a schedule for requiring submittal of ranch plans and or suites of BMPs that the ranchers are actually implementing in these high problem areas. So for those that are already actively implementing the suite of BMPs that the researchers are encouraging and that a lot of you are, in fact, already implementing, you would just have to explain what you are doing and submit information that demonstrates what you're doing. The reporting format and the functionality of that we can work on and we can talk about. But that is what we're doing, trying to, or what we're recommending today in the resolution that we're asking the board to adopt.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Perlman, and then Mr. Allen, we did find your card. And then Paul, is it Ravella or Robella? Last card. Go ahead, Mr. Perlman.
Hello, my name is Alon Perlman. You probably know me because I do appear in Los Osos a lot. But I also did get a degree in microbiology and immunology and one in molecular biology. And I did work with the pharmaceutical industry of the FDA, and that leads to regulation. And one of the reasons the FDA does well is because they are working with large organizations that have staff and are fully able to take on the regulatory burden themselves. In other words, that system works well because the implementers are, in that case, the producers. In that case, they produce pharmaceuticals that have to show efficacy. But they do monitor and regulate themselves. That's the way that system works. That allows for small government, and it allows for efficiency. And it's a hierarchy. At this point, the programs you're looking at, and I think all of you do recognize this, you're interfacing with a non-hierarchical situation. You have large ranchers who can hire lawyers and do research. And then you've got basically weekend operations, and you really have to consider at what level and to what degree you are modeling the ability of these polluters, or let's call them implementation partners, to what degree you can encourage them to not have a financial burden on themselves by undergoing unnecessary corrections, and to what degree they can communicate with you without overburdening you. And so there is the, in this case, we have researchers who do understand, for example, that septic tanks contribute, on ranches, contribute very much the same profile of medications, of coffee, of what we might call pollutants entering the streams. There are certain profiles to certain types of operations. I think you're going in the right directions, but you really can't ask small ranches to develop their own regulatory checklists. So to some degree, it's really the work that's being done that you're hearing about, and I need to find individual names. It was Mary Ellen Dick who spoke before you, and you asked her several questions. That this is a very good working model. The thing is, you can't really be in a situation where that model comes to you through public speaking. You have to accept that there are gaps in your ability to have a network of compliance. Because if you don't, as I say, in this economy, people are, it's not good for ranch to unnecessarily close a creek for reasons. I have a minute or none.
You could wrap up your comments. That'd be fine.
I believe I'll be able to speak some more, but I think there is a good direction here, but to be able to actually achieve your goals by 2025, you really, this is where the tire meets the road in terms of implementation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Allen. And then last speaker is Paul Robella.
Yes, Ray Allen. I'm San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association. I'd like to thank the staff's consideration that they do recognize the difference between large ranching operations and some of the hobby farmers. A group of us that represented all six counties of the region put together a pretty fair idea of what the grazing community has encountered and what we have contributed over the years, and this was presented to staff last fall, and I'm hoping that the board members have had a chance to review that presentation that we made. Also, I would really urge the staff to give more recognition to the ongoing research that's being done now by the university, which Mr. Miller referred to. It's very informative. It's really on the site work of what the contributions are made. The other thing that's come out of that research is the fact that they are having a problem with some of the indicator species that we are using for a regulatory target. So I would urge staff to fully consider the work that Dr. Tate and Dr. Atwill are doing. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for your comments. Last speaker is Paul Robella. See how close I got that.
That was it. You said it right. Thank you very much for the chance to speak. I just wanted to clarify, I guess, what I'm hearing from staff and from your questions and from this large collection of documents that are available on the internet. We don't, any one of the sources that have been pointed out in this could be causing the exceedance, and we're not sure exactly what source is contributing what amount to the exceedance. Even though there are methods available, ribotyping, I think, was mentioned, to tell what is contributing to these exceedances. Also, the state is doing some sort of modification to a statewide plan that might supersede the basin plan for the Pajaro River watershed or for the Central Coast Basin. And so despite all of that blank spot or this all this questionable material and all these questions that remain, we're going to impose a fecal coliform TMDL on landowners who may be operating domestic animal cattle operations or other livestock operations on their property. Is my understanding correct? There's these questions out there as to what's causing these exceedances, as to the possibility that this basin plan might be superseded in the near future by a state which is going to take into account EPA monitoring data, and we're going to impose right now or in the time being a TMDL.
Well, here,
domestic animal discharges.
Let me address that point this way. E. coli are part of the fecal coliform group of bacteria. They're not inconsistent and contradict each other.
Right. They're one part.
They're one. Yeah, but a big part of it and a important part of it. Anything that would be required now to address fecal coliform is going to be consistent to address E. coli.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing is we face this from time to time where we have either the feds or the state board pondering to update their regs, you know, create new criteria and standards. We never know when that's going to happen. That could be in 6 months, it could be in a couple of years, or it could be many, many years down the line. We don't wait for that to happen because we don't know when it's going to happen. We go ahead and continue to do what we do based on the best available information we have at the time and the standards that are in place. So, you know, using the term, you know, superseding, well, it's going to probably augment the standards. I don't think they're going to throw out fecal coliform bacteria altogether, but they'll add a component of E. coli.
Or could modify it or change it.
Or modify it, yeah. But, you know, the 200 and the 400 numbers have been around for a long, long time.
Well, the reason why I brought that up is just because it seems like we're working backwards. We don't know what's causing it, so let's impose the responsibility for controlling it on these landowners who may or may not be contributing to it. And then, according to one of these reports I read, at that point, if the domestic animal discharges are controlled, then we'll go back and reassess the target.
Right. You know,
it just seems like we're working back. They're incurring these costs now, and they might not even be the problem.
The way I see it, staff, when we do these TMDLs, staff gets out in the field. Mm-hmm. They get a picture of what's going on and what are the likely sources, the contributing sources. I don't think that what they have identified are unreasonable or completely irrelevant in terms of potential contributors.
Okay. No,
it's true. We don't know exact percentages of contribution, but we don't need to know that level of detail in order to start implementing best management practices to start to see those levels drop down. Staff said that they're going to look at reaches of streams and focus on those and look at what's going on in those reaches. So I think that that's pretty reasonable. And when they do that, they're going to see what's the predominant potential source in that area. Maybe there's no ranches there.
Okay. And then two other comments. One is I didn't see any evaluation here of the costs of treatment capture and treatment if the ranch is determined, if a single ranch is determined to be a contributor. I didn't see any evaluation of the cost of what it would be to retain the water on site and maybe treat it and release it if that's one of the if that's one of the issues. I didn't see an evaluation of that cost. And also one more thing to consider, which I don't believe was addressed in here, is if you're taking land out of a range, a lot of times a lot of ranchers have to determine the head in their herd by the amount of land that they're grazing. And if you're taking land out of a range, you're going to have to reduce the size of the herd, which is going to impact financially the rancher as well. And the last thing, I think what Ms. Dick may have been alluding to, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, and I don't want to speak for anybody but myself, is the Central Valley has a rangeland waiver. I don't know, I don't believe the Central Coast does, but that might be something that might be an opportunity.
Well, and as to waivers, they're kind of a misnomer.
I mean, I understand, you know, that.
It's an unfortunate use of that term, waiver. A waiver is a permit.
Sure.
And it just, what it's waiving are the, is the requirement to submit formal waste discharge reports.
But it still
invokes all other, you know, federal and state laws that have to be, you know, followed, and especially what's in the basin plan.
Right. So, but it's more of a, if you're participating, then there's more of a, I don't want to use the word guarantee, but there's more of a guarantee, I guess, guarantee that, that you're not one of the contributing sources.
If you're in a waiver?
If you're participating.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Simply signing up and then doing everything wrong is completely unacceptable.
Well, so you're participating in the waiver, so you've got to provide a best management plan and a rangeland management plan or whatever.
That means taking actions.
Exactly. I'm not saying just paying
problems.
Money and,
right.
and getting out and not doing anything is a way around it. I'm saying it's what she was alluding to was if the rancher does these things, then at this point under this current plan, who's to say that a staffer comes out and says, well, no, you need a 70-foot buffer instead of a 30-foot buffer because obviously this isn't working, or you need to move your stables, or you need to place your salt licks farther outside of this area. I think it's just, I may be totally off base, but that's just what I understood she might be saying, and something that might be an opportunity in the Central Coast is a rangeland waiver. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Mr. Thomas.
I just wanted to mention a couple of things. One is that the bacteria limitations that are proposed in this TMDL, you mentioned that they've been around for a long time. And I wanted to point out that those are basin plan requirements. So they're established in the basin plan. And so we're applying those.
Right.
So it's not a matter of whether those numbers are valid or not. They are established requirements in the basin plan.
Right.
So we're not here today to discuss requirements that are in the basin plan.
Right. But I think his concern was whether they were going to be superseded by E. coli standards by the state board at some point. And so why not wait for that to happen?
Yeah. And the other thing I want to point out is that this idea of we may not be discharging, so there's no reason to apply the standard to us. Well, it already applies to all of us because it is an existing standard in the basin plan. And it's like, that would be like saying there's no reason to establish a speed limit because I may not be speeding. Speed limit is established, and
right.
it's there.
Right.
The point is, are we going to apply it or not?
Right. Okay, that's the last of my speaker cards. Any member? Mr. Hayashi.
Mr. Allen, what is a typical, is there a rule of thumb for number of head of cattle per acre?
That depends entirely on what area you're in.
What would be a low number? What would be a high number?
If you're on irrigated pasture, it's one number, and if you're on the eastern side of San Luis Obispo, it's several numbers.
And the eastern side is just a non-irrigated rangeland.
It'll vary from probably 15 acres per cow to 30 or 40 acres per cow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other board comments or questions? Mr. Briggs?
Yeah, I wanted to, if it's okay with the board, give our staff a chance to. And now, one thing that's been a little bit different today is we've actually been responding to many of the comments as we've gone along, so we don't want to repeat those, but I wanted to see if there are any items where you want to make a point or recap or in response.
As you pointed out, Mr. Briggs, we have been responding to comments as they've been commented. I did want to comment with respect to the comments about economic analysis for these TMDLs. We did verify that we did our due diligence with the with requirements before us to do economic analysis to do an approximate cost to implement this TMDL. So we did verify that we did what we are obligated to do, and I think all the other comments have been addressed.
Can I ask you to actually expand on a point that John Ricker was making? The hypothetical situation where it's 100 and he identifies, or the county monitoring program identifies that there's 10 of that's from a human source. It would seem to me that, as we saw from the map, we have many of the water bodies, the main water bodies in the watershed, that are impaired and are over 200. And it may be sort of an academic question, because in reality, we're going to be focusing on those areas that are not meeting the 200 standard. So it seems to me it's going to be kind of an academic question. The exception, I think, would be if you have known sources, and I know in San Lorenzo Valley, for example, there have been individual enforcement actions, including by your DA, where there have been direct discharges of sewage to drainage ways. That didn't necessarily mean that the standard was violated down at the City of Santa Cruz inlet, but it doesn't mean that you look the other way. So when there are known problems, you'd follow up on it. However, if it's a general area-wide problem and you're meeting the standard, that means we're going to be focusing on the areas that don't meet the standard. So that is a statement. I guess I'd ask if that's consistent with the way you envision that we would be following up.
Yes, I think that is consistent with the way we'll be following and implementing this TMDL.
Okay. And then lastly, this is a little bit repetitive, but conversely, if they're not meeting, not conversely, but in the case where they're not meeting the standard, I just wanted to repeat that it's not going to be sufficient to simply submit a plan and say, I submitted a plan, and it's analogous to the gentleman who was saying, if there's a waiver and we sign up for the waiver, then we have a guarantee. And that, I want to make sure that you understand that's not the case. It's not sufficient to simply submit a plan, and that's why I said there's got to be action and it's got to be effective action. So to the extent that we still continue to have water quality exceedances, then that's where it gets to where you're talking about following up, trying to figure out where those are coming from, and see where obviously those actions have not been sufficient, and then do something about that.
Yes, I think that's consistent with what we have in mind and with what Mr. Hayashi also sort of alluded to, that when the TMDL is implemented and when we get these plans, of course, our intent is that we get a plan that, once implemented, that will have a feedback loop, if you will, that will demonstrate eventual compliance with water quality objectives. And if what is done in the field isn't working, then, of course, we want to revisit what is being done to see what will work to achieve the water quality objectives and the TMDL.
Okay. And then I guess lastly, in terms of, is that it from all you folks there? Just wanted to point out that we did have the supplemental sheet with underline strikeout text that's part of our recommendation. And any other changes besides those that we're recommending?
numbers to Briggs, no other changes.
This seems like it's going to be for staff a more labor-intensive TMDL to implement than some of the others because of all of the individual potential affected parties. Is that true?
I would say if you wanted to comment, I would say that that is a safe, safe statement. Yeah, it's when we have many potential dischargers.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll take a motion.
I'll move staff recommendation with the changes.
I'll second.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
And I'd just like to thank Mr. Osmolovsky for a really good presentation. I thought that I'm not a big favorite, you know, fan of PowerPoints, but I thought the presentation was good and clear, and it really got all the information across.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it was also, very good.
Also, that was your maiden voyage on a presentation to the board, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. So I appreciate that feedback.
Good job.
Right. Okay. We'll move to